All right. Hey, y'all. It is grab your wallet time. We've been having fun doing this show. We love you guys for supporting us. Those of you that don't support us, patreon.com is where you go give us the money to get us to these people or beers to these people so we can interview them. And John's got some t-shirts. So that's on stealthisbeer.com/merch. Check that out. Either way, thanks for playing along. Can't believe we get away with this every week, Monday at 5.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all, it's 5 o'clock on Monday and we are stealing beer. I'm Augie Carton.
Boy, your audio is just, we'll get through it. Hi, I'm John Hall. Nice to partially hear your voice there, Augie.
Hi, John Hall. Sorry about the bad voice. If it gets too much, just start talking right over me like you typically would. Justin Kennedy, you there?
I'm here. It almost sounds like you're at the top of a mountain or something.
In another time zone.
I am indeed. I'm at 8,000 feet.
In another state or something?
Yeah, it's early here, boys.
Yeah.
It's early here, boys. You got me for my pre-noon beer this week. So let's introduce Matthias. Matthias, say your name for me, Mr. Trump.
Matthias from the Schlenkerlust Smoke Beer Brewery. Matthias, right.
I can hit that. Nice. Yeah. So this is an honor for all of us.
Well, thank you for the invitation. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for joining us. I'm sure the thieves are giddy with anticipation. I will give you some history to frame this up, and then I think we're just going to let you roll. But a long time ago, on one of John's Baker Dozen podcasts, he coined the fictitious or somewhat fictitious "This Week in Smoked Beer" or something like that. And we've attached ourselves to it. It just completely enjoyed its vim and its vigor. And as this podcast rolls into its sixth year, you were kind of our dream get to talk about all things smoky and beer. So thank you very much for taking the time. Go on, sir.
You're putting a high estimation of what I can contribute. I can follow up on what you expect of me.
Well, the good
this
news
has already
is no matter
exceeded
how good
expectations.
Bad,
yeah. Yeah.
No matter how
pressure
good
is always
you
good.
Are, John and I will screw it up. No matter how good or bad you are, John and I will definitely screw it up. So that's the nature of the show. But just to finish, the one interesting thing we've picked up on this, I guess it's almost 2-year-old side jaunt we do, is there's a tremendous amount of American brewers. We interview all types of people. And, you know, we have guys that identify as lager brewers, guys that identify as trendy ale brewers. We have guys that identify as, you know, marshmallow brewers and everything right and wrong with beer culture today. We get in here and we treat them all the same. But what we've discovered since John started this is there's very few brewers that don't have a secret smoked beer somewhere in their yearly turns of tanks that when you tell them you're interested in it, they'll drop all other conversation to talk about. So
yeah.
Since I don't think there's anybody that denies your position in this world, has that always been the case? Has there always been a secret tank of smoked beer everywhere you ever go? And when you show up, they're like, wait till you taste this.
It's a little bit like that. Yeah. We seem to be the reference style, partially, obviously, because we've been doing it historically for centuries. We didn't invent the smoke beer, but I guess we're going to get to that later on in the talk. But it's a little bit like that Chinese proverb that the best is always being copied and people trying to achieve to that. And the funny thing is that all these trials or all these secret smoke beers you find in other places, I'm not talking about quality and whether they're good or bad, because that's very often a question of personal perception or personal preference for that matter. But all those trial runs of copying are basically destined to fail, because whenever you work at another brewery, you have to work with the smoke malts you're getting supplied by the industry malting companies, or maybe you try to smoke something yourself, ready-made malt, and you smoke that afterwards. But it's just not the historic way of doing it, which we do at our brewery, where we have those old facilities. And obviously you cannot copy an old facility, you can build a new one, but that's not going to be the same thing as it has been done for centuries. So when you want to do that one-on-one copy of a classic Flankler, it just won't work. You can do a very good smoke beer, obviously, to personal perception, yeah. Maybe even better if people like a certain flavor better. So I would not dare to say that our beer is the best smoke beer in the world. That's really a personal opinion. But we're doing it the most historic way, and that's something pretty much impossible to copy.
But it's such a, I love your humility, because it's refreshing to talk to a brewer who has humility on this show.
Fuck you.
Well, I love Augie's premise of the secret tank of smoke beer, and you know that's all they want to talk about with people. There are some brewers who don't have your confidence, Augie, who I think would be terrified to give their smoke beer to Matthias. And so I, that was just sort of a fun setup that you had where,
John, why would you make everybody feel bad for non-confident brewers this early in a show when we have a classic on? Come on, John, don't torpedo the whole episode.
But your humility of maybe not saying it's the best, although most people would disagree, I imagine. But there's something about the benchmark and what people think of when they think of the smoke beer category and thinking of your brewery, and trying to live up at least to the reputation or the expectations that you've put out into the market. And I'm always sort of curious from brewers of your caliber and of your brewery history, of what it's like to carry that mantle of, you know, it's like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is the gold standard in the, you know, the pale ale category, or, you know, and it's you guys with smoked beer. What's that like for you?
Well, at the beginning, I didn't really realize that when I took over from my father. I mean, it was all a very local business. We had a little bit of export, but the whole craft beer revolution hadn't really quite started. So for us, it was more a thing of continuation of the tradition and upholding the old recipes and all that. And that's what we still do today. And it's only been in the last 10 years or so where I realized how the whole market has changed in such a way that there's so many new brewers out there who obviously experiment a lot and have a lot of ideas, but also try to do their versions of traditional beers, lambic beers, and of course smoked beers. And now being put on, you know, like the altar or the stand of the historic brewery, and maybe even being aspired to by some people, that's a weird feeling, really, because it's we don't see ourselves as the leaders in the market or the inventors, like maybe Apple is the inventor of the smartphone, or Microsoft is the inventor of office software. It's for us, it's just we're doing what we always have been doing. And I have all these images here in my office from my ancestors, my great-great-grandfather, and they were all doing the same thing we do today. The only different thing is for us today that we use a little bit more technology for shipping the beer around, for, you know, doing talks like we do today, because obviously 20 years ago you wouldn't do a podcast with the United States or even within Germany. So we have a bigger reach.
Are we about to end that tradition?
Yeah, so we have a bigger reach than we used to have, but we don't see, or we didn't realize for a long time, that so many people are you know, looking towards Bamberg as or towards us as the mecca of smoke beer. So it's a challenge to a certain degree, because it always means that of course our quality is looked at very closely and extremely, and basically we cannot allow ourselves to do anything wrong, if you put it that way. So like, yeah, if we were to put out a batch which is not perfect, everybody would, you know, kind of put the finger and say, hey, look, look what they're doing. Hey, here, yeah. They don't know, or they did it wrong. Haha, you know. So so that's a little bit of a challenge, which we gladly accept. We're a very small brewery. That's what a lot of people don't realize. We only do something like 20,000 barrels a year, which is tiny compared to Sierra Nevada, what you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
But we actually, I have 10 people working at my brewery. All of them are trained brewers. So in Germany, you have that apprenticeship when you learn a profession. So all of these are have underwent a training for 3 years. And in addition, we have 4 brewmasters at our brewery, including myself. So it's a little bit, you know, like in the Star Wars movies where you have all these Jedi masters and they Jedi apprentices and all these guys who are really well trained. And so it's a little bit in our brewery. We are extremely skilled people in there. We have run our own laboratory and in addition to all these historic recipes we have and the continuation of those, we also have the means of making sure that on a microscopic level, on a chemical level, we can really make every batch perfect to the last degree. And I think that sets us apart from a lot of other small breweries, especially some of the craft breweries where you have very inventive people, very creative people, very ingenious people in a way, but very often they didn't come from that very traditional road where you did the craft of brewing, learning stuff for years and years until you actually started that. So we're kind of the best of worlds, both worlds we bring here together. So I think we're up for the task, but as said, it's a big challenge, and we're always working our best in order to fulfill the expectations all these beer geeks out there have for us.
Awesome. So all right, first let's do the black glass so we're through okay. It. What brings us together on Steal This Beer is a candid conversation of beer, what it is and not what we hoped it would be, what it's doing and not what we were told it would do, and what flavors we're getting, not what flavors they wrote. So to facilitate this, we drink blind out of black glasses. I can't imagine, Kennedy, that you managed to get Matthias.
No. He doesn't. Beer. No, okay. He doesn't. Sorry.
Right, so this you get a pass. You get a pass on this one.
But you would have gotten bonus points had you made it happen. No.
Can you imagine the taxes involved in shipping a beer to Germany?
Let alone two.
They probably would let it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, difficult.
Plus the tariffs. Well,
my guess is. Yeah. My guess is this one they might have let in. Because in classic Kennedy fashion, I think we're opening today. I am supposed to be drinking beer 3, right, Kennedy?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because we are opening in a classic Reinheitsgebot Pilsner style. I mean, this is just a straight up European Pilsner beer. I'm not getting anything truly wonderfully unique on it, but a reminder, in Utah, it's only 11 a.m. and I haven't even had breakfast yet. I'm on coffee. So I might be missing some beautiful subtlety that I'm trying to drink through right now. But John, what are you getting out of this one?
So Reinheitsgebot is not what came to mind for me. This feels like an American Pils, but there is a little bit of melon character off of it, like very faint.
Oh, I like that.
You know, like, ooh, I like honeydew, that. But like,
yep,
100%. That's been cut and sitting on the other side of the room. It's not super, super impressive. And then it's just got like a nice soft Carapils character on the back end of it. Maybe there's a little bit of bitterness, a little bit of sweetness, a touch of caramel sugar on the finish. But there's what I liked about this particular beer is it's one that we can talk about very quickly so that we can get back to the conversation.
Yep. Exactly. My only question for you is, and I love your melon note, there's no doubt I get that. But to me, it just feels like I didn't mean that it was a European beer. I meant that it was a 4-ingredient Pilsner when I said Reinheitsgebot. Mm-hmm. And to me, it just feels like it's somebody's Hell's or something like it. And I mean, just a good drinking beer, I'm imagining from somewhere around us, because it tastes fresh to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, it doesn't okay, cool. have.
So yeah, I'm drinking this springtime outside sunlight drinking. Moving on.
Okay.
You guys what are is there it, enough Justin? Where you yeah. drink. So this is, John, you want to go or you want me to just tell you what it is?
No, that's fine. I'm drinking this is like a decision beer for me. Like I'm going to drink this while I figure out what I'm going to have next.
Okay.
And it might be another one of these.
You guys are right about everything. This is from one of our locals. This is Three's Brewing Undone, Fooder Fermented Czech Pilsner. But I picked it because
Fooder. So maybe that's a little vanilla sweetness from the wood that you're getting, John.
It could be. Yeah. Lack of caramel.
They but do
yeah,
love that like fooder.
Yeah. So this is their 6th anniversary beer. It's also our 6th anniversary. So that's kind of.
Oh. This isn't our 6th anniversary.
Look at you.
Show,
well chosen, Kennedy.
No, this is the one after.
No, that's coming up.
That's no, that would have been.
We
that would have been too
perfect. Our 6th anniversary.
That would have been too perfect there, Justin.
That would have been amazing.
Two right. on the nose.
All right. All right. Back to it. So let's get back. Let's get right back to the important part where we talk about all things smoky with Matthias. Matthias, so I understand family tradition and I love the idea of kind of that Zen and the art of motorcycle maintenance version of having the beers you do and just doing them perfectly every time you brew. And I imagine that's a very rewarding way to do things, but also as the 6th generation of your family running this spot, is there any, son of a brewer man, I could do something different instinct in you? And do those ideas still run smoky, or are you ever wishing you could marshmallow up an IPA like somebody over here in the States?
I'm not a marshmallow person, but
they go well over flame.
When I think marshmallows, I always think of Ghostbusters, but that's a different story. Okay.
but every person I've ever toasted a marshmallow by a fire with, I'd say 70% of the lazy people burn their marshmallows rather than try to get that beautiful caramel on it. So there's clearly a smoke aspect to marshmallow eating that you might want to dive into, make the first smoked marshmallow IPA.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't forget that here in Germany we're much stricter bound by the purity law. It's actually mandatory, so we're right. not allowed okay. to brew outside the purity law. That's of course a whole different debate whether that's good or bad or what effects that has. And
Augie's got thoughts.
The historic background of the purity law is a totally different one. It's more about taxation and saving or making sure that the population is not poisoned and stuff like that. And of course, that doesn't apply today anymore. The taxation does, but the poisoning thought, of course, does not, because we know so much more about food and bacteria and et cetera. So from that angle, purity law does not have that much of a meaning. But I still think the purity law is very important from a point of view of defining what we understand. So when you think of the beverage beer, which has been around for thousands of years and which has had its developments even the fact that most beers today are not smoky is a development, because originally all the beers were smoky, at least here in Central Europe. So the purity law defines, in my opinion, what we think a beer is. And any beverage outside that, so when you talk a pumpkin ale or the marshmallow beer or whatever ideas you might have out there, these might be good drinks and maybe even better tasting than a beer to some people, but it's not defined as a beer. It's a barley-based beverage, but not a beer. So purity law, at least for Germans, defines what you understand as a beer. So by making sure that the purity law still is there, you make sure that consumers, when they get a beer, when it says beer on the label, they in a certain range know what to expect. And if it doesn't say beer and you call it otherwise, which is the way you do it in Germany, then you still might get something interesting and something you like, and maybe even you like better, but it's not a beer. Yeah, so it defines the character of the beverage. And I think that's a little bit lost in other countries where a beer can be something totally different than a beer. Yeah. So I think we're on a better understanding for the consumer. Of course, you can put all this information on the label, what the flavor is like, but that's not the way it works in Germany. Like most pack labels are pretty boring, and they just say, well, we use the best ingredients and we brew according to the purity law. But coming back to your original question, whether I want to do something different or do my own thing. History was always my favorite subject in school, and I grew up here in the brewery tavern, with my family. I still live in the first floor, or nowadays in the second floor above the brewery tavern. So the family heritage and history was always very much part of what I did, and I enjoy that very much. And it, more importantly, gives me a sense of purpose. I can contribute to this generation task of continuing the historic way of doing smoke beer, and that's so much more rewarding than working at some other company where eventually one day you retire and you don't really see what your contribution in the long run was, because someone takes over and they might change it over totally or do something different, or the company closes or whatever. So it's really like a generation task we as a family are doing here. But of course you're right. When you start something, when you get into work somewhere, you have your own ideas and you want to do certain things maybe differently or do your own baby and not just continue what the ones before you have done. But that's the interesting thing. When you come from a historical angle and you look at beer from a historic point of view, there is so many things you can do which are not there anymore today. Old recipes you can rediscover, old brewing techniques you can rediscover. And in my opinion, or for me, that's actually more interesting than that what a lot of craft brewers do out there, which is basically experimenting with ingredients and trying new flavors and trying new recipes. That would be not not cup of tea, but glass of beer. I'm not the creative chef who flips ingredients and gets this totally new flavor nobody thought of before. That's not my thing. I'm good at eating, but I'm really bad at cooking in the kitchen. So, but what I can do and what I like is digging out these old recipes from centuries ago and putting them back to life today. And this is what Schlenkerla has done all the time. Like we have continued the old smoke beer tradition, but I have introduced a number of styles, variations of smoke beer in the last 15 years since I'm at the helm here at Schlenkerla, which haven't been there before. The oak smoke Doppelbock, where the malt is kilned with oak wood rather than beech wood, which was the common thing we did before. Because back in the old days, obviously centuries ago, also other types of woods were used, not only beech. Then we introduced a summer version of Schlenkerla, a blend between our pale lager and the classic Märzen in the Kreuzen style. Mm. The Kreuzen in German are the foam bubbles that form during the main fermentation in the German brewer's language. And Aufkreuzen was a technique by which a stale beer was recarbonated by adding some wort from a fresh batch. And that was a common thing brewers did centuries ago in the summertime, because in the summertime, bottom fermented beers were not producible because there was no artificial cooling to enable bottom fermented lagering. So in the summertime, all the bottom fermented beers came from the rock cellars and had been brewed in the winter before. And since there was no pressure fermentation in the wooden barrels, those beers had gone partially stale or to a large extent stale. And in order to get the carbonation going again, you put in wort from a fresh batch. And that technology is called Aufkreuzen. So when you ask 100 brewers in Germany, even skilled brewers, 99 of those have never heard of that. Yeah. So when you read up these old stories that brewers used to do that continuously, and then you bring that back as a modern interpretation of the style, the Schlenkerler Sommerbier, the Schlenkerler Preußen, this is what I like so much, that you bring history and modern flavor expectation together. And the newest addition to that, because you were asking about what I have done differently, or what babies I brought into the business, is actually a low alcohol beer, which we've been doing since the last year. You might be aware that in the old times, people would not drink water usually, because water was potentially polluted with pathogenic bacteria. It came from wells, or maybe even from open rivers in the medieval towns, and that was always a health risk. So most people would drink beer when they could afford it. And the problem, of course, is if you drink beer instead of water, you're going to be drunk most of the time, and you cannot go about your daily chores. So what did brewers do back then? The standard beer back then was lower in alcohol than what we have today. It was around 2 to 3% alcohol, but even that was too high for hard labor and also for children. So there existed really low alcohol beer, and in Bamberg, the brewers had discovered a very special brewing technique to do that. It involved a different type of lautering and mashing, and they actually managed, well, I found the recipes, and we experimented at our brew house with that, because we still have the historic setup with mash tun, lautering tun, and decoction fermentation mashing. Classic copper vessels. Mm-hmm. So we experimented with those old recipes, and it actually turned out to a beer with 0.9% alcohol. So almost alcohol free. And at the same time, it still has a really good beer flavor, not as rich as a Bock or a Porter, of course, but it's absolutely beery flavor. And we call it the office beer, because you can drink it during the day in your office and you don't feel anything in your head, but you still have the beer flavor. And we introduced that at first as a smoke beer version, that the so-called Hansler, the little Hans, yeah, because it was a children's beer. Mm-hmm. And actually we started last year with a non-smoky version of that as well, under the original name. In the old days, that type of beer here in Bamberg was called Heinzlein, like the beer for the little Heinz, for the children. And we have that as a pale and a dark version, and it's only locally here in Bamberg in supermarkets. So we're actually doing something outside the Schlenker range nowadays. Wow, So to answer your question, yes.
Go on.
Yes, I do something different. Yeah,
but I like it's still that zen in the art of motorcycle maintenance, right? You're just perfecting a thing down different paths, which is absolutely fascinating. So this leads me, I think, to my most important the question I most want to ask you, even though I'm sure it'll break the hearts of everybody. But the nice part about Schlenker being so well known is I know enough to lead this entire conversation and then get a real answer. But I've been told a million times your Hells is not smoked in any way, and all of that smoke phenolic we get off it is a pickup from just the nature of the building it's in, be it the yeast or the kettle or the ambient news. And you mentioned earlier your commitment to lab work and testing all that. So one, I want to make sure what I know to be true is actually true and not just what Americans tell me when I ask about your beers. And two, have you ever pinpointed in a theoretically smoke-free brew, have you ever pinpointed exactly where it's picking up different phenolics of smoke? Or, you know, assuming that that my first point is accurate and that it is a smoke-free mash?
Yeah. Now, the main influence is actually the yeast. As you might know, when you work with a typical bottom fermenting yeast, you reuse that. So you don't work with a single batch yeast. The big industry breweries do it because they have certain other ideas about that. But if you do it the traditional way, the yeast is harvested after the main fermentation and then reused for the next batch. I have a nice anecdote for that as well. But first, let's go on your question. So when we do our pale lager, we use a yeast which has been in a classic smoked beer before. And that really brings in most of the smokiness. If we wanted to take that element out, we could start the pale lager with a new yeast, because we're regularly supplied with yeast from other breweries. Like, we don't have our own Schlenkler yeast laboratory style. Or a breed. For that, we're too small. So we could start the Helles Lager with or the Pale Lager with a new yeast, and then we would reduce that smokiness considerably. So, but since the style always has been like that, we do not do that. Yeah, because we want to be continuous. Understood. On that level as well. The other big influence.
Yeah, I think would break my heart if I bought one. I think it would break my heart if I bought one and it wasn't smoky, even if, you know, for the best intentions, you're like, all right, let's make it. I think I'd be like, wait a second, what happened?
Yeah.
Anyway, go on. Yeah. I'm sorry.
And I mean, there's so many pale lagers out there. There's no point that Schlenkler does one and it's just not smoky. Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting tweak about ours. And the other great influence, and that's something we actually cannot take out, is the malt mill. Because you cannot cleanse the malt mill to such an extent that the smokiness is totally out of there. So once we have it in use, it's gone. And there's actually an interesting story to that, an interesting anecdote from the 1990s. My father introduced a smoked wheat beer in the 1990s, because that was when wheat beers became very popular. Mm-hmm. In Germany. And we said, obviously, if we want to do a wheat beer, a lot of customers in our brewery pub demanded it. Then if we do one, it must be smoky, because historically the wheat beers were smoky as well, because back then that was the only technology available to dry the malt. So for the first batch of wheat beer, we did not have the necessary facility for it, because you need a fermentation unit which can run at higher temperatures, because wheat beer works at around 20, or wheat yeast works at around 20 degrees Celsius. Whereas the bottom fermenting yeast works at around 7 to 8 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. So my father asked a befriended brewery, because we obviously didn't know how it was received by the customers. So before we invested in our own fermentation vessel, we wanted to do a trial batch to see whether customers wanted that at all. So my father asked a befriended brewer, another brewery here in a small Franconian village, and they actually did that for us. And batch was fine, and it was well received by customers, so we invested in our own technology from then onwards. But the befriended brewery actually said that their customers complained for months that the beer was smoky, which they were brewing afterwards, because it took so long to get the smoke out of their system. Yeah, it's something really defined and strong. And if you ever had the case of or heard that when your clothes were in a house where there was a fire, you can throw those clothes away. You never get that smokiness totally out of it. Mm. Yeah, and that's just the same in our production facility to that end. And everything about Schlenkler is smoky, and I mentioned earlier the low alcohol beer we're doing since last year, the Heinz line. For that, actually, we start with a fresh batch of yeast, and there we get it pretty much out. And since the malt bill is very low on that one, the influx from the malt mill doesn't play a role. So this one is actually smoke-free, but everything else, you have that homeopathic smoke addition to it. And that really comes from the yeast.
That's I mean, you know, as a brewer, anytime you fool around in a tank, you're like, what's going to stick to the pipes? What's going to stick to the tubes? What's going to stick to the gaskets? I love that it's like, oh, it's the yeast that picked that up and
carrying it around.
Maybe it's everything else, but it lives in our yeast.
That's awesome.
So let's quickly do beer two so we can finish this up and stay on these topics that I'm enjoying. So what do you think? It's like 2003 IPA in a stovepipe can. I think it's what's funny to me about it is it ends up sweet. Like, it smells like it's going to be, you know, like a classic 90s, and it's got some brewer's crystals or some kind of sugar play, as far as I can tell, to make it, if not all the way to modern plush hazy palate, at least half the distance sugar wise.
I guess so. That's I like that take only because it's the way that I was sort of going with it. It has West Coast sensibilities to it. And it feels like it was somebody saying, like, you know, well, let's try a hazy, you know, like a West Coast kind of
thing. But let's not fully try a hazy.
Or just like getting scared, or I don't know what it was, but like it doesn't fully execute. And yeah, therefore,
it's like
for me,
if
it just
you took Citra, Zaca. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just.
Well, that's the thing. So it smells West Coast. It smells what we would now call classic. But its palate is like, okay, but if we use Azaka, Galaxy, and Mosaic and some brewer's crystals, it'll taste like melon, so let's just move on. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And not pretty melon like you caught in the... This. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me terrified. Justin's trying to get us to fight in front of a German about how
I know it's going to be
silent.
It's going to be Weinstephan's hazy IPA.
It's significantly better than Christmas IPA. It's significantly
well,
better
yeah,
than Christmas
but
IPA.
Everything
I will say
is
that
by comparison. No, this.
But
this
I'm just terrified. Like,
where...
who uses stovepipes? Who uses stovepipes for hazes? Nobody I'm aware of. So I'm terrified. This is an AB concoction.
Sure. And
anyway.
And it kind of has that feel.
There's
to
nothing
it.
Wrong with it. It's fun to drink. It's fun to drink. I just wish it went further down the hazy path.
That's
right.
Yeah. I wish it committed sugar, right? to. I wish it committed sweet. To being haze. That's the thing. I wish it like fully committed to being hazy. And
yeah, it feels like somebody pulled up on the reins right before they made the jump.
Yes. Yes. So, right. I'm drinking this at a post-vaccination party. You know, because
oh, let me say
that.
Let me say this. If I could find
happy
this,
to be at a party,
right? But if I could find this at a game, I'd be okay with it.
Well, sure. Well, AB has most of the contracts, so
this would be much better than we haven't cleaned the hoses in Yankee Stadium in 732 years.
Yeah,
Miller Lite.
Yes, most things are.
All right, so
Justin, tell us what it is so we can move on, so we can get back to Matthias.
This is from Sierra Nevada. This is their new Big Little Thing, which is part of the Little Thing series. There's a Hazy Little Thing, there's a Wild Little Thing, and this is the Big Little Thing. This is almost 10% alcohol.
Sure, in a stovepipe can, why not?
In a stovepipe can, yeah.
Ken, we don't need this from you.
And you're
thank
than
you,
this.
But
they sell it in six packs. But I was like, no, I'm gonna get the 19.
Wait, they're selling it in six pack stovepipe cans?
No, six pack 12-ounce. But I was like, I'm gonna buy the big one and send it to him. So
there it is.
I would have the 12-ounce probably would have gotten a totally different reaction. Here's what I will say: that ABV is tucked in there. That did not jump out to me as a booze bomb.
It drinks like a 6% beer. It's crazy.
All right,
back to it.
So, Matthias, another thing you said, and it's funny because you crossed. All right, so you said that, you know, as a chef in the brewery, you're not looking to completely reinvent a flavor magically, or I'm paraphrasing, but you know what you said and you know what you meant. But one of the things you talked about is where I think a true chef in your kitchen would go, which is changing the woods. We've had two different guests on the show. Joe Carroll, who is a smoker of meats with a very interesting beer project. And we've also had our friends from a brewery here in America called Against the Grain, who are, besides being a brewery, they do barbecue food. So they will often smoke their own malts and do all these fun little smoky things to project beers, which definitely drew our attention. But between Joe and Against the Grain, I've learned that picking a different wood, all other things being equal in the food or malt you're doing, completely changes or dramatically changes what you're doing. So the fact that you went to that oak wood even in tradition is that kind of chef inspiration I'm thinking about. And then I was just wondering, you know, if in these historical recipes you look at, or again, in your own project, because you do smoke all your own malts at home, right? So have you ever been like, maybe we can find some pine wood and do something weird? Or, you know what I mean? Are you sticking to classic, these are malt smoking woods like cherry oak and beechwood?
There is one major difference between what you've been describing, what your other guests have been doing, where they experimented with other types of wood, and the thing what we're doing. I'm totally with you. Changing the wood changes the flavor and changes the beer. All other things being equal, same mashing technology, same fermentation protocol, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to turn out totally different beer. And you see that very nicely when you compare the Urbock with the Oak Smoke Doppelbock. Yeah, the only difference really is that the Oak Smoke Doppelbock on the brewing side has a higher malt to water ratio, so a higher malt bill. But the real flavor difference and the color difference all comes from using oak wood instead of beech wood. So I'm totally with you. But there's a second aspect we have to consider. When we produce malt, and we do that with the open fire, the main purpose of the open fire is not to smoke the malt. The main purpose is to dry the malt, because that's what you have to do on the kiln. You have to dry the malt. In a modern industry malting company, they use hot air, which comes from a gas furnace or an oil furnace or some modern form of technology. So the prime target of kilning is to dry the malt, maybe to roast it to a certain extent to get some melanoidin flavors. I'm not sure whether I translate that correctly into English.
Yeah. No, you nailed it, and I've never said it right.
So that really is the main aim, and the fact that we get a smoke in there at the same time is a side effect, which in the old days was just unavoidable because the non-smoky kiln with a smoke filter had not been invented yet. So the first and most important thing for us when we choose a wood is that it brings enough heating energy, that it burns in a sufficient way in order to actually dry and kiln the malt. And the composition of the smoke, of course, is of interest as well, because we want the flavor to stay in the original form, or as for the Eiche to do certain experiments. But you cannot move to any type of wood. And that's the interesting part from a historic point of view. I don't know whether you read up on our website running up to the show today. The reason why the non-smoky kiln was invented was exactly that. In England, in the 17th century, adequate wood for kilning malt had become scarce, because they had cut down the forests for colonization, for shipbuilding, and England had to acquire and purchase large amounts of wood from the Dutch, who brought that over in ships from the Baltics, and that costs enormous amounts of money. So there was an economic pressure to invent a technology which makes you independent of the wood quality to kiln your malt. And the person who invented that was a Sir Nicholas Hulse of Cornwall, and he got a patent in the early 17th century, I think it was 1637, on a kiln which channeled the smoke outside the actual kiln and then dried the malt with a secondary air and just used the excess heat of the furnace to do that. And by that, it became possible to use all kinds of fuels. And the first what they actually would use was sea coal, more or less a scrub, basically. Coke they use afterwards. Oh. Sea coal is a type of scrub, which is growing in England. I don't know whether it exists in the States as well. And once they started with the whole industrialization process and started using coal for all kinds of furnaces, obviously they switched to that because it was so much cheaper. And so Nicholas Hawes actually calculated the economic benefit for the English crown by switching to his technology, and it summed up to the enormous amount at the time of £400,000 per year. Yeah, so there was a strong economic draft to that. And coming back to modern times, when we experiment with other types of wood, we always have to think of that technology aspect first and then the flavor component. Yeah, so we're not as free in what we can experiment than when you put up your big smoker and you put a ready-made malt inside and you smoke
right.
that. But right. there's a different aspect to it as well. That's what I said in my introduction. When you take a ready-made malt and you smoke that, the way the smoke will go into that malt is totally different than when you actually kill the malt and have the smoke as a side effect there. Yeah, it's a different physics, a different chemistry within the grain and how the smoke gets into there. So that will result in a different flavor. And to my knowledge, there's basically no one who does it the original way. Like we do it, some Scottish whiskey distillers do it with their peat smoked malt, where the peat is actually also the fuel to kiln the malt. But that flavor is totally different than what we're doing. And it would be extremely difficult to set up that old technology in a new way, like construct a furnace the original way, make sure that the vents and everything is going the original way, so that you have a circulation as you do it in the original furnaces. Because when you buy malt from a big industry maltings, the sizes of the batches are totally different. When you look at a modern malting company, they would do here in Germany, I don't know about America, a batch would be something like 400 or 500 tons of malt. So that's our annual production. Yeah, that's what we do in an entire year. So a batch at Schlenkler is something like 3.5-4 tons. So you have a totally different air configuration within that kiln. And that would result in a different flavor.
I love the you know, same story, different tale of, you know, you compare yourself to Weyermann. When people here in America ask me questions that are, you know, that are Lagunitas questions, and I have to explain to them that there's a giant difference between 6,000 barrels a year and 100,000 barrels a year.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that you have the same explanation for malting. Anyway, I expected we'd run out of time with you, and that's bound to happen. Let me first say thank you very much for taking the time. I know it's very late there, but it was really nice to have you. I love the confirmations and the just getting a touch for not taking anecdote. I don't think we should do a letter here. I don't think it helps unless you have a smoke letter.
I don't have one.
You nailed it so perfectly with the sixth anniversary beer for our first show in our seventh year. I don't want to put too much pressure on you.
Thank you.
I'd like to say thank you. I'd also like to say, hey, Patreons, this show is brought to you by you. So thank you for Patreoning us. Cass, why don't you tell people how to do that? And tell them. And the last thing I want to know is what emails we write to Matthias in so that we can get the children's beer here for me and John.
Yeah.
So that we can make it through a third episode in a day.
God, that's the secret sauce right there.
What's that called?
Behind slime.
Stupid petition thing everybody does these days? Yeah, that's what we need. That's what we need.
Yeah.
Anyway, Cass, you take over. John, follow up with how to get more baby.
thanks to those at Patreon. It's patreon.com/steal this beer. Follow us on all social medias at steal this beer. And then do write us about smoke beers. Let us know how much you like this episode. steal this beer podcast@gmail.com.
It's stellar as always.
I actually enjoyed a Lent beer on this episode as well. So I just happened to have a Schlenker in the fridge. So thanks so much for having this stateside, Matthias. Appreciate it.
And shout out to Be United for bringing it in, and for Matthias from Be United for putting us in touch.
Thank you so much again for organizing that and for providing me the opportunity to talk a little bit. And maybe to everyone out there, just a small recap from my side. The personal motto I have here at Schlenkler is upholding tradition, obviously. And when you look up on the internet, when you search for upholding tradition, you find this nice old proverb. It's actually from France, I think. And it says, upholding tradition does not mean to keep the ashes. It means to keep the fire burning. And I think in a very literal meaning, that is what we do here at Schlenkler. And thank you very much to all of your listeners and the smoke beer lovers out there that they enable us, because obviously we need drinkers in order to continue that tradition. And thank you very much to everyone out there who is a Schlenkler fan and helps us in continuing and keeping the old flame burning. Thanks.
Thank you. Awesome.